a nightmare, too. And the dream about white cloaks binding her father's hands. A nightmare brought on by homesickness, she supposed. But the others? She glanced at the other two women again. Elaine was still reading, Nynaeve still paced with that steady tread. There had been a dream of Rand reaching for a sword that seemed to be made of crystal, never seeing the fine net dropping over him. And one of him kneeling in a chamber where a parched wind blew dust across the floor, and creatures like the one on the dragon banner, but much smaller, floated on that wind and settled into his skin. There had been a dream of him walking down into a great hole in a black mountain, a hole filled with a reddish glare, as from vast fires below, and even a dream of him confronting Seanchan. About that last, she was uncertain, but she knew the others had to mean something. Back when she had been sure she could trust Anaya, back before she had left the tower, before she learned the reality of the Black Aja, a little cautious questioning of the Aes Sedai, done oh so carefully, so Anaya would think it no more than the curiosity she showed about other things, had revealed that a dreamer's dreams about Ta'veren were almost always significant, and the more strongly Ta'veren, the more almost always became certainly. But Matt and Perrin were Ta'veren too, and she'd also dreamed of them. Odd dreams, even more difficult to understand than the dreams of Rand. Matt with a falcon on his shoulder and Perrin with a hawk. Only the hawk held a leash in her talons. Egwene was somehow convinced both hawk and falcon were female, and the hawk was trying to fasten it around Perrin's neck. That made her shiver even now. She did not like dreams about leashes. And that dream of Perrin, with a beard, leading a huge pack of wolves that stretched as far as the eye could see. Those about Matt had been even nastier. Matt placing his own left eye on a balance scale. Matt hanging by his neck from a tree limb. There had been a dream of Matt and Seanchan, too, but she was willing to dismiss that as a nightmare. It had to have been just a nightmare. Just like the one about Matt speaking the old tongue. That had to come from what she had heard during his healing. She sighed, and the sigh turned into another yawn. She and the others had gone to his room after breakfast to see how he was, but he had not been there. He is probably well enough to go dancing. Light. Now I will probably dream about him dancing with Seanchan. No more dreams, she told herself firmly. Not now. I will think about them when I am not so tired. She thought of the kitchens, of the midday meal soon to come, and then supper, and breakfast again tomorrow, and pots and cleaning and scrubbing going on forever. If I am ever not tired again. Shifting her position on the bed, she looked at her friends again. Elaine still had her eyes on the list of names. Nynaeve's steps had slowed. Any moment now, Nynaeve will say it again. Any moment. Nynaeve came to a halt, staring down at Elaine. Put those away. We have been over them 20 times and there isn't a word that helps. Verin gave us rubbish. The question is, was it all she had, or did she give us rubbish on purpose? As expected. Maybe half an hour till she says it again. Egwene frowned down at her hands, glad she could not see them clearly. The great serpent ring looked out of place, on hands all wrinkled from long immersion in hot, soapy water. Knowing their names helps, Elaine said, still reading. Knowing what they look like helps. You know very well what I mean, Nynaeve snapped. Egwene sighed and folded her arms in front of her, rested her chin on them. When she had come out of Shiriam's study that morning with the sun still not even a glint on the horizon, Nynaeve had been waiting with a candle in the cold, dark hall. She had not been seeing very clearly, but she was sure Nynaeve had looked ready to chew stone, and knowing chewing stones would not change anything in the next few minutes. That was why she was so irritable. She's as touchy about her pride as any man I ever met, but she should not take it out on Elaine and me. Light, if Elaine can stand it, she should be able to. She isn't the wisdom anymore. Elaine hardly appeared to notice whether Nynaeve was irritable or not. She frowned into the distance thoughtfully. Leandrin was the only red. All the other Ajahs lost 2 each. Oh, do be quiet, child, Nynaeve said. Elaine wiggled her left hand to display her great serpent ring, gave Nynaeve a meaningful look, and went right on. No two were born in the same city, and no more than two in any one country. Amiko Nagoyen was the youngest, only 4 years older than Egwene and I. Joya Bier could be our grandmother. Egwene did not like it that one of the Black Aja shared her daughter's name. Fool girl. People sometimes have the same name, and you never had a daughter. It wasn't real.
And what does that tell us?
Nynaeve's voice was too calm. She was ready to explode like a wagon full of fireworks.
What secrets have you found in it that I missed? I'm getting old and blind after all.
It tells us it is all too neat, Elaine said calmly. What chance that 13 women chosen solely because they were dark friends would be so neatly arrayed across age, across nations, across Ajahs? Shouldn't there be perhaps 3 reds, or 4 born in Kyrian, or just 2 the same age if it was all chance? They had women to choose from, or they could not have chosen so random a pattern. There are still black Aja in the tower, or elsewhere we don't know about. It must mean that.
Nynaeve gave her braid one ferocious tug. Light, I think you may be right. You did find secrets I couldn't. Light, I was hoping they all went with Leandrin.
We do not even know that she is their leader, Elaine said. She could have been ordered to dispose of us. Her mouth twisted. I am afraid I can only think of one reason for them to go to such lengths to spread everything out so, to avoid any pattern except a lack of pattern. I think it means there is a pattern of some kind to the Black Aja.
If there's a pattern, Nynaeve said firmly, we will find it. Elaine, if watching your mother run her court taught you to think like this, I'm glad you watched closely.
Elaine's answering smile made a dimple in her cheek.
Egwene eyed the older woman carefully. It seemed Nynaeve was finally ready to stop being a bear with a sore tooth. She raised her head.
Unless they want us to think they're hiding a pattern, so we will waste our time hunting for it when there isn't one.
I'm not saying there isn't. I'm only saying we do not know yet. Let's look for it, but I think we ought to look at other things too, don't you?
So you finally decided to rouse, Nynaeve said. I thought you had gone to sleep, but she was still smiling.
She is right, Elaine said disgustedly. I have built a bridge out of straw. Worse than straw, wishes.
Maybe you are right too, Nynaeve. What use is this rubbish?
She snatched one paper out of the stack in front of her.
Rihanna has black hair with a white streak above her left ear. If I'm close enough to see that, it's closer than I want to be. She grabbed another page.
Chesmal Emery is one of the most talented healers anyone has seen in years. Light, could you imagine being healed by one of the Black Aja?
A third sheet.
Marilyn Gamalfin is fond of cats and goes out of her way to help injured animals.
Cats! Pah! She scrabbled all the pages together, crumpling them in her fists.
It is useless rubbish.
Nynaeve knelt beside her and gently pried her hands from around the papers.
Perhaps, and perhaps not.
She smoothed the pages carefully on her breast.
You found in them something for us to look for. Perhaps we will find more if we are persistent. And there is the other list.
Both her eyes and Elaine's darted to Egwene, brown and blue alike, frowning worriedly. Egwene avoided looking at the table where the other sheets lay. She did not want to think about them, but she could not avoid it. The list of Turangrial had etched itself into her mind.
Item. A rod of clear crystal, smooth and perfectly clear, 1 foot long and 1 inch in diameter, use unknown. Last study made by Corianne Nadil.
Item. A figurine of an unclothed woman in alabaster, 1 hand tall, use unknown. Last study made by Corianne Nadil.
Item. A disc, apparently of simple iron yet untouched by rust, 3 inches in diameter, finely engraved on both sides with a tight spiral, use unknown. Last study made by Corianne Nadil.
Item. Too many items,
and more than half the use unknowns last studied by Corianna Nadil, 13 of them to be exact. Egwene shivered. It's getting so I do not even like to think of that number. The knowns on the list were fewer, not all of any apparent real use, but hardly more comforting as she saw it. A wooden carving of a hedgehog, no bigger than the last joint of a man's thumb. Such a simple thing, and surely harmless. Any woman who tried to channel through it went to sleep. Half a day of peaceful, dreamless sleep, but it was too close not to make her skin crawl. Three more had to do with sleep in some way. It was almost a relief to read of a fluted rod of black stone a full pace in length that produced balefire, with the notation, "Dangerous and almost impossible to control," writ so strong in Verin's hand that it tore the paper in two places. Egwene still had no idea what balefire was, but though it surely sounded dangerous if anything ever did, it just as surely had nothing to do with Corianna Nadil or dreams. Nynaeve carried the smoothed-out pages to the table and set them down. She hesitated before spreading the others out and running her finger down one page, then the next. "Here's one Matt would enjoy," she said, in a voice much too light and airy. "Item, a carved cluster of 6 spotted dice, joined at the corners, less than 2 inches across. Use unknown, save that channeling through it seems to suspend chance in some way, or twist it." She began to read aloud. Tossed coins presented the same face every time, and in one test landed balanced on edge 100 times in a row. 1,000 tosses of the dice produced 5 crowns 1,000 times. She gave a forced laugh. Matt would love that. Egwene sighed and got to her feet, walked stiffly to the fireplace. Elaine scrambled up, watching as silently as Nynaeve. Pushing her sleeve as far up her arm as it would go, Egwene reached carefully up the chimney. Her fingers touched wool on the smoke shelf, and she pulled out a wadded, singed stocking with a hard lump in the toe. She brushed a smear of soot from her arm, then took the stocking to the table and shook it out. The twisted ring of striped, flecked stone spun across the tabletop and fell flat atop a page of the Tarangrial list. For a few moments, they just stared at it. "Perhaps," Nynaeve said finally. "Verin simply missed the fact that so many of them were last studied by Corianan." She did not sound as if she really believed it. Elaine nodded, but doubtfully. "I saw her walking in the rain once, soaking wet, and took a cloak to her. She was so wrapped up in whatever she was thinking, I do not believe she knew it was raining until I put the cloak around her shoulders. She could have missed it." "Maybe," Egwene said. "If she did not, she had to know I'd notice as soon as I read the list. I do not know. Sometimes I think Verin notices more than she lets on. I just do not know." "So there's Verin to suspect," Elaine sighed. "If she is Black Aja, then they know exactly what we are doing. And Alana." She gave Egwene an uncertain, sidelong look. Egwene had told them everything, except what happened inside the Tarangrial during her testing. She could not bring herself to talk about that, any more than Nynaeve or Elaine could tell of their testings. Everything that happened in the testing chamber, what Shiriam had said about the terrible weakness conferred by the ability to channel, every word Verin had said, whether it seemed important or not. The one part they had had trouble accepting was Alana. Aes Sedai just did not do things like that. No one in her right mind did anything like that, but Aes Sedai least of all. Egwene glowered at them, almost hearing them say it. "Aes Sedai are not supposed to lie, either, but Verin and the Mother seem awfully close with what they tell us. They are not supposed to be Black Aja." "I like Alana." Nynaeve tugged her braid, then shrugged. "Oh, very well. Perhaps, that is, she did behave oddly." "Thank you," Egwene said, and Nynaeve gave her an acknowledging nod as if she had heard no sarcasm. "In any case, the Amarlin knows of it, and she can keep an eye on Alana far more easily than we can." "What about Elida and Shiriam?" "I have never been able to like Elida," Elaine said. but I cannot truly believe she is Black Aja. And Shiriam? It's impossible. Nynaeve snorted.
It should be impossible for any of them. When we do find them, there is nothing says they'll all be women we do not like. But I don't mean to put suspicion, not this kind of suspicion, on any woman. We need more to go on than that they might have seen something they shouldn't.
Egwene nodded agreement as quickly as Elaine, and Nynaeve went on.
We will tell the Ammerlin that much and put no more weight to it than it deserves, if she ever looks in on us as she said she would. If you are with us when she comes, Elaine, remember she does not know about you.
I am not likely to forget it, Elaine said fervently.
But we should have some other way to get word to her. My mother would have planned it better.
Not if she could not trust her messengers, Nynaeve said.
We will wait. Unless you two think one of us should have a talk with Verin. No one would think that remarkable.
Elaine hesitated, then gave her head a small shake. Egwene was quicker and more vigorous with hers. Slip of the mind or not, Verin had left out too much to be trusted.
Good.
Nynaeve sounded more than satisfied.
I am just as pleased we cannot talk to the Ammerlin when we choose. This way we make our own decisions, act when and as we decide, without her directing our every step.
Her hand ran down the pages listing stolen Turangrial as if she were reading it again, then closed on the striped stone ring.
And the first decision concerns this. It's the first thing we have seen that has any real connection to Leandrin and the others.
She frowned at the ring, then took a deep breath.
I'm going to sleep with it tonight.
Egwene did not hesitate before taking the ring out of Nynaeve's hand. She wanted to hesitate. She wanted to keep her hands by her sides, but she did not, and she was pleased.
I am the one they say might be a dreamer. I do not know whether that gives me any advantage, but Verin said it's dangerous using this. Whichever of us uses it, she needs any advantage she can find.
Nynaeve gripped her braid and opened her mouth as if to protest. When she finally spoke, though, it was to say,
Are you sure, Egwene? We do not even know if you are a dreamer, and I can channel more strongly than you. I still think I...
Egwene cut her off.
You can channel more strongly if you are angry. Can you be sure you'll be angry in a dream? Will you have time to become angry before you need to channel?
Light, we don't even know that anyone can channel in a dream.
If one of us has to do it, and you are right, it is the only connection we have, it should be me. Maybe I really am a dreamer. Besides, Verin did give it to me.
Nynaeve looked as if she wanted to argue, but at last she gave a grudging nod.
Very well. But Elaine and I will be there. I do not know what we can do, but if anything goes wrong, perhaps we can wake you up, or...
We will be there.
Elaine nodded, too.
Now that she had their agreement, Egwene felt a queasiness in the pit of her stomach.
I talked them into it. I wish I did not want them to talk me out of it.
She became aware of a woman standing in the doorway, a woman in novice white, with her hair in long braids.
Did no one ever teach you to knock, Elsa? Nynaeve said.
Egwene hid the stone ring inside her fist. She had the strangest feeling that Elsa had been staring at it.
I have a message for you, Elsa said calmly. Her eyes studied the table with all the papers scattered on it, then the three women around it.
From the Ammerlin.
Egwene exchanged wondering looks with Nynaeve and Elaine.
Well, what is it? Nynaeve demanded.
Elsa arched an eyebrow in amusement.
The belongings left behind by Leandrin and the others were put in the third storeroom on the right, from the main stairs in the second basement under the library.
She glanced at the papers on the table again and left, neither hurrying nor moving slowly.
Egwene felt as if she could not breathe.
We're afraid to trust anybody, and the Ammerlin decides to trust Elsa Grinwell of all people?
That fool girl cannot be trusted not to blab to anyone who'll listen.
Nynaeve started for the door.
Egwene grabbed up her skirts and darted past her at a run. Her shoes skidded on the tiles of the gallery, but she caught a glimpse of white vanishing down the nearest ramp and dashed after it.
She must be running, too, to be so far ahead already. Why is she running?
The flash of white was already disappearing down another ramp. Egwene followed. A woman turned to face her at the foot of the ramp, and Egwene stopped in confusion. Whoever she was, this was certainly not Elsa. All in silver and white silk, she sparked feelings Egwene had never had before. She was taller, more beautiful by far, and the look in her black eyes made Egwene feel small, scrawny, and none too clean. She can probably channel more of the power than I can, too. Light, she is probably smarter than all three of us put together on top of it. It isn't fair for one woman to... Abruptly, she realized the way her thoughts were going. Her cheeks reddened, and she gave herself a shake. She had never felt less than any other woman before, and she was not about to start now. Bold, the woman said. You are bold to go running about so, alone, where so many murders have been done. She sounded almost pleased. Egwene drew herself up and straightened her dress hurriedly, hoping the other woman would not notice, knowing she did, wishing the woman had not seen her running like a child. Stop that! Pardon, but I'm looking for a novice who came this way, I think. She has large, dark eyes and dark hair in braids. She's plump and pretty in a way. Did you see which way she went? The tall woman looked her up and down in an amused way. Egwene could not be sure, but she thought the woman might have glanced a moment at the clenched fist by her side, where she still held the stone ring. I do not think you will catch up to her. I saw her, and she was running quite fast. I suspect she is far away from here by now. Aes Sedai, Egwene began, but she was given no chance to ask which way Elsa had gone. Something that might have been anger or annoyance flashed through those black eyes. I have taken up enough time with you for now. I have more important matters to see to. Leave me. She gestured back the way Egwene had come. So strong was the command in her voice that Egwene turned and was three steps up the ramp before she realized what she was doing. Bristling, she spun back. Aes Sedai or no, I... The gallery was empty. Frowning, she dismissed the nearest doors, no one lived in those rooms except possibly mice, and ran down the ramp, peered both ways, followed the curve of the gallery with her eyes all the way around. She even peered over the rail, down into the small Garden of the Accepted, and studied the other galleries, higher as well as lower. She saw two Accepted in their banded dresses, one Faelaine and the other a woman she knew by sight, if not name. But there was no woman in silver and white anywhere. Chapter 26. Behind a Lock. Shaking her head, Egwene walked back to the doors she had dismissed. She had to go somewhere. Inside the first, the few furnishings were shapeless mounds under dusty cloths, and the air seemed stale, as if the door had not been opened in some time. She grimaced. There were mouse tracks in the dust on the floor, but no others. Two more doors opened hastily showed the same thing. It was no surprise. There were many more empty rooms than occupied in the Accepted's galleries. When she pulled her head out of the third room, Nynaeve and Elaine were coming down the ramp behind her with no particular haste. Is she hiding? Nynaeve asked in surprise. In there? I lost her. Egwene peered both ways along the curving gallery. Where did she go? She did not mean Elsa. If I had thought Elsa could outrun you, Elaine said with a smile, I'd have chased her too, but she has always looked too plump for running to me. Her smile was worried, though. We will have to find her later, Nynaeve said, and make sure she knows how to keep her mouth shut. How could the Ammerlin trust that girl? I thought I was right on top of her, Egwene said slowly, but it was someone else. Nynaeve, I turned my back for a moment and she was gone. Not Elsa, I never even saw her. The woman I thought was Elsa at first. She was just gone, and I don't know where. Elaine's breath caught. One of the soulless? She looked around hastily, but the gallery was still empty except for the three of them. Not her, Egwene said firmly. I am not going to tell them she made me feel 6 years old, with a torn dress, a dirty face, and a runny nose. She was no gray man. She was tall and striking with black eyes and black hair. You'd notice her in a crowd of 1,000. I have never seen her before, but I think she is Aes Sedai. She must be. Nynaeve waited as though for more, then said impatiently, If you see her again, point her out to me, if you think there's cause. We've no time to stand here talking. I mean to see what is in that storeroom before Elsa has a chance to tell the wrong person about it. Maybe they were careless. Let's not give them a chance to correct it if they were. As she fell in beside Nynaeve with Elaine on the other side, Egwene realized she still had the stone ring, Corianna Nadil's Turangrial, clutched in her fist. Reluctantly, she tucked it into her pouch and pulled the drawstrings tight. As long as I don't go to sleep with the bloody... But that's what I am planning, isn't it? But that was for tonight, and no use worrying about it now. As they made their way through the tower, she kept an eye out for the woman in silver and white. She was not sure why she was relieved not to see her. I am a grown woman, and quite capable, thank you. Still, she was just as glad that no one they encountered looked even remotely like her. The more she thought of the woman, the more she felt there was something wrong about her. Light, I'm starting to see the black Aja under my bed. Only, maybe they are under the bed. The library stood a little apart from the tall, thick shaft of the White Tower proper, its pale stone heavily streaked with blue, and it looked much like crashing waves frozen at their climax. Those waves loomed as large as a palace in the morning light, and Egwene knew they certainly contained as many rooms as one, but all those rooms, those below the odd corridors in the upper levels where Verin had her chambers, were filled with shelves, and the shelves filled with books, manuscripts, papers, scrolls, maps, and charts collected from every nation over the course of 3,000 years. Not even the great libraries in Tyr and Cairhien held so many. The librarians, brown sisters all, guarded those shelves and guarded the doors as closely to make sure not a scrap of paper left unless they knew who took it and why. But it was not to one of the guarded entrances that Nynaeve led Egwene and Elaine. Around the foundations of the library, lying flat to the ground in the shade of tall pecan trees, were other doors, both large and small. Laborers sometimes needed access to the storerooms beneath, and the librarians did not approve of sweating men tracking through their preserve. Nynaeve pulled up one of those, no bigger than the front door of a farmhouse, and motioned the others down a steep flight of stairs descending into darkness. When she let it down behind them, all light vanished. Egwene opened herself to Saidar. It came so smoothly that she barely realized what she was doing, and channeled a trickle of the power that flooded through her. For a moment, the mere feel of that rush surging within her threatened to overwhelm other sensations. A small ball of bluish-white light appeared, balanced in the air above her hand. She took a deep breath and reminded herself of why she was walking stiffly. It was a link to the rest of the world. The feel of her linen shift against her skin returned, of woolen stockings and her dress. With a small pang of regret, she banished the desire to pull in more, to let Saidar absorb her. Elaine made a glowing sphere for herself at the same time, and the pair provided more light than 2 lanterns would have. It feels so wonderful, doesn't it? She murmured. Be careful, Egwene said. I am, Elaine sighed. It just feels... I will be careful. This way, Nynaeve told them sharply, and brushed by to lead them down. She did not go too far ahead. She was not angry, and had to use the light the other two provided. The dusty side corridor by which they had entered, lined with wooden doors set in gray stone walls, took nearly 100 paces to reach the much wider main hall that ran the length of the library. Their lights showed footprints overlaying footprints in the dust, most from the large boots men would wear, and most themselves faded by dust. The ceiling was higher here, and some of the doors nearly large enough for a barn. The main stairs at the end, half the width of the hall, were where large things were brought down. Another flight beside them led deeper. Nynaeve took it without a pause. Egwene followed quickly. The bluish light washed out Elaine's face, but Egwene thought it still looked paler than it should. We could scream our lungs out down here and no one would hear a whimper. She felt a lightning bolt form, or the potential for one, and nearly stumbled. She had never before channeled two flows at once. It did not seem difficult at all. The main hall of the second basement was much like the first level, wide and dusty but with a lower ceiling. Nynaeve hurried to the third door on the right and stopped. The door was not large, but its rough wooden planks somehow gave an impression of thickness. A round iron lock hung from a length of stout chain that was drawn tight through two thick staples, one in the door, the other cemented into the wall. Lock and chain alike had the look of newness. There was almost no dust on them. A lock! Nynaeve jerked at it. The chain had no give, and neither did the lock. Did either of you see a lock anywhere else? She pulled it again, then flung it against the door hard enough to bounce. The bang echoed down the hall. I did not see one other locked door! She pounded a fist on the rough wood. Not one!
Calm yourself, Elaine said. There is no need to throw a tantrum. I could open the lock myself if I could see how the inside of it works. We will open it some way.
I do not want to calm myself, Nynaeve snapped. I want to be furious. I want...
Letting the rest of the tirade fade from her awareness, Egwene touched the chain. She had learned more things than how to make lightning bolts since leaving Tar Valon. One was an affinity for metal. That came from Earth, one of the five powers few women had much strength in. The other was fire. But she had it, and she could feel the chain, feel inside the chain, feel the tiniest bits of the cold metal, the patterns they made. The power within her quivered in time to the vibrations of those patterns.
Move out of my way, Egwene.
She looked around and saw Nynaeve wrapped in the glow of Saidar and holding a pry bar, so close in color to the blue-white of the light that it was nearly invisible. Nynaeve frowned at the chain, muttered something about leverage, and the pry bar was suddenly twice as long.
Move, Egwene!
Egwene moved. Thrusting the end of the pry bar through the chain, Nynaeve braced it, then heaved with all her strength. The chain snapped like thread. Nynaeve gasped and stumbled halfway across the hall in surprise, and the pry bar clattered to the floor. Straightening, Nynaeve stared from the bar to the chain in amazement. The pry bar vanished.
I think I did something to the chain, Egwene said. And I wish I knew what.
You could have said something, Nynaeve muttered.
She pulled the rest of the chain from the staples and threw open the door.
Well? Are you going to stand there all day?
The dusty room inside was perhaps 10 paces square, but it held only a heap of large bags made of heavy brown cloth, each stuffed full, tagged, and sealed with the flame of Tar Valon. Egwene did not have to count them to know there were 13. She moved her ball of light to the wall and fastened it there. She was not certain how she did it, but when she took her hand away, the light remained.
I keep learning how to do things without knowing what they are, she thought nervously.
Elaine frowned at her as if considering, then hung her light on the wall, too. Watching, Egwene thought she saw what it was she had done.
She learned it from me, but I just learned it from her. She shivered.
Nynaeve went straight to tumbling the bags apart and reading the tags.
Rihanna, Joya Bier, these are what we are after.
She examined the seal on one bag, then broke the wax and unwound the binding cords.
At least we know no one's been here before us.
Egwene chose a bag and broke the seal without reading the name on the tag. She did not really want to know whose possessions she was searching. When she upended them onto the dusty floor, they proved to be mainly old clothes and shoes, with a few ripped and crumpled papers of the sort that might hide under the wardrobe of a woman who was not too assiduous in seeing her rooms cleaned.
I don't see anything useful here. A cloak that would not do for rags, a torn half of a map of some city. Tear, it says in the corner. 3 stockings that need darning.
She stuck her finger through the hole in a velvet slipper that had no mate and waggled it at the others.
This one left no clues behind. Amico did not leave anything either, Elaine said glumly, tossing clothes aside with both hands.
It might as well be rags. Wait, here's a book. Whoever bundled these up must have been in a hurry to toss in a book. Customs and Ceremonies of the Tyran Court. The cover is torn off, but the librarians will want it anyway. The librarians certainly would. No one threw away books, no matter how badly damaged.
Tyr, Nynaeve said in a flat voice. Kneeling amid the clutter from the bag she was searching, she retrieved a scrap of paper she had already thrown away. A list of trading ships on the Erinnan, with the dates they sailed from Tar Valon and the dates they were expected to arrive in Tyr.
It could be a coincidence, Egwene said slowly.
Perhaps, Nynaeve said. She folded the paper and tucked it up her sleeve, then broke the seal on another bag. When they finally finished, every bag searched twice and discarded rubbish heaped around the edges of the room, Egwene sat down on one of the empty bags, so engrossed that she barely noticed her own wince. Drawing up her knees, she studied the little collection they had made, all laid in a row.
It is too much, Elaine said. There is too much of it.
Too much, Nynaeve agreed. There was a second book, a tattered leather-bound volume entitled Observations on a Visit to Tyr, with half its pages falling out. Caught in the lining of a badly torn cloak in Chesmal Emery's bag, where it might have slipped through a rip in one of the pockets of the cloak, had been another list of trading vessels. It said no more than the names, but they were all on the other list, too, and according to that, those vessels had all sailed in the early morning after the night Leandrin and the others left the tower. There was a hastily sketched plan of some large building, with one room faintly noted as Heart of the Stone, and a page with the names of five inns, the word Tyr heading the page badly smudged but barely readable.
There's something from everyone, Egwene muttered. Every one of them left something pointing to a journey to Tyr. How could anyone miss seeing it if they looked? Why did the Amyrlin say nothing of this?
The Amyrlin, Nynaeve said bitterly, keeps her own counsel, and what matter if we burn for it? She drew a deep breath and sneezed from the dust they had stirred up. What worries me is that I am looking at bait.
Bait? Egwene said,
but she saw it as soon as she spoke. Nynaeve nodded. Bait, a trap, or maybe a diversion. But trap or diversion, it's so obvious no one could be taken in by it.
Unless they do not care whether whoever found this saw the trap or not.
Uncertainty tinged Elaine's voice.
Or perhaps they meant it to be so obvious that whoever found it would dismiss Tyr immediately.
Egwene wished she could not believe that the Black Aja could be as sure of themselves as that. She realized she was gripping her pouch in her fingers, running her thumb along the twisted curve of the stone ring inside.
Perhaps they meant to taunt whoever found it, she said softly. Perhaps they thought whoever found this would rush headlong after them in anger and pride.
Did they know we would find it? Do they see us that way?
Burn me, Nynaeve growled.
It was a shock. Nynaeve never used such language. For a time, they simply stared in silence at the array.
What do we do now? Elaine asked finally.
Egwene squeezed the ring hard. Dreaming was closely linked to foretelling. The future and events in other places could appear in a dreamer's dreams.
Maybe we will know after tonight.
Nynaeve looked at her, silent and expressionless, then chose out a dark skirt that seemed not to have too many holes and rips, and began bundling in it the things they had found.
For now, she said, we will take this back to my room and hide it. I think we just have time if we don't want to be late to the kitchens.
Late, Egwene thought. The longer she held the ring through her pouch, the greater the urgency she felt. We're already a step behind, but maybe we won't be too late. Chapter 27 Teleron Riod. The room Egwene had been given, on the same gallery with Nynaeve and Elaine, was little different from Nynaeve's. Her bed was a trifle wider, her table a little smaller. Her bit of rug had flowers instead of scrolls. That was all. After the novices' quarters, it seemed like a room in a palace, but when the three of them gathered there late that night,
Egwene wished she were back on the novice galleries, with no ring on her finger and no bands on her dress. The others looked as nervous as she felt. They had worked in the kitchens for two more meals, and in between tried to puzzle out the meaning of what they had found in the storeroom. Was it a trap, or an attempt to divert the search? Did the Armerlin know of the things? And if she did, why had she not mentioned them? Talking provided no answers, and the Armerlin never appeared so they could ask her. Varen had come into the kitchens after the midday meal, blinking as if she were not sure why she was there. When she saw Egwene and the other two on their knees among the cauldrons and kettles, she looked surprised for a moment, then walked over and asked, loud enough for anyone to hear, "Have you found anything?" Elaine, with her head and shoulders inside a huge soup kettle, banged her head on the rim, backing out. Her blue eyes seemed to take up her entire face. "Nothing but grease and sweat, Aes Sedai," Nynaeve said. The tug she gave her braid left a smear of greasy soap suds on her dark hair, and she grimaced. Varen nodded as if that were the answer she had been seeking. "Well, keep looking." She peered around the kitchen again, frowning as though puzzled to find herself there, and left. Alanna came to the kitchens after midday too, collecting a bowl of big green gooseberries and a pitcher of wine, and Elida, then Shiriam, appeared after supper, and Anaya too. Alanna had asked Egwene if she wanted to know more of the green Aja, inquired when they were going to get on with their studies. Just because the accepted chose their own lessons and pace did not mean they were not supposed to do any at all. The first few weeks would be bad, of course, but they had to choose, or the choosing would be done for them. Elida merely stood for a time, stern-faced and staring at them, hands on her hips, and Shiriam did the same in almost the identical pose. Anaya stood the same way, but her look was more concerned, until she saw them glancing at her. Then her face became a match for Elida's and Shiriam's before her. None of those visits meant anything that Egwene could see. The mistress of novices certainly had reason to check on them, as well as on the novices working in the kitchens, and Elida had reason to keep an eye on the daughter heir of Andor. Egwene tried not to think of the Aes Sedai's interest in Rand. As for Alanna, she was not the only Aes Sedai who came for a tray to take back to her rooms, rather than eat with the others. Half the sisters in the tower were too busy for meals, too busy to take the time to summon a servant to fetch a tray. And Anaya? Anaya could well be concerned for her dreamer, not that she would do anything to ease a punishment set by the Armerlin seat herself. That could have been Anaya's reason for coming. It could have been. Hanging her dress in the wardrobe, Egwene told herself once again that even Varen's slip could have been perfectly ordinary. The brown sister was often absent-minded, if it was a slip. Sitting on the edge of her bed, she pulled up her shift and began rolling down her stockings. She was almost beginning to dislike white as much as she did gray. Nynaeve stood in front of the fireplace with Egwene's pouch in one hand, tugging her braid. Elaine sat by the table, making nervous conversation. "Green Aja," the golden-haired woman said, for what Egwene thought must be the 20th time since midday. "I might choose Green Aja myself, Egwene. Then I can have 3 or 4 warders, perhaps marry one of them. Who better for Prince Consort of Andor than a warder? Unless it is..." She trailed off, blushing. Egwene felt a pang of jealousy she thought she had put down long ago, and sympathy mixed with it. "Light, how can I be jealous when I cannot look at Galad without shivering and feeling as if I am melting, both at the same time? Rand was mine, but no more. I wish I could give him to you, Elaine, but he is not for either of us, I think. It may be all well and good for the daughter heir to marry a commoner, as long as he's an Andor man, but not to marry the dragon reborn." She let the stockings fall on the floor, telling herself there were more important things to worry about tonight than neatness. "I'm ready, Nynaeve." Nynaeve handed her the pouch and a long, thin strip of leather. "Perhaps it will work for more than one at once. I could go with you, perhaps." Emptying the stone ring onto her palm, Egwene threaded the leather strip through it, then tied it around her neck. The stripes and flecks of blue and brown and red seemed more vivid against the white of her shift.
"And leave Elaine to watch over the both of us alone, when the Black Aja may know us?"
"I can do it," Elaine said stoutly.
"Or let me go with you, and Nynaeve can keep guard. She is the strongest of us when she's angry, and if there is need for a guard, you can be sure she will be."
Egwene shook her head.
"What if it won't work for two? What if two of us trying makes it not work at all? We would not even know till we woke up, and then we've wasted the night. We cannot waste even one if we are to catch up. We're too far behind them already." They were valid reasons, and she believed them, but there was another, closer to her heart.
"Besides, I'll feel better knowing both of you are watching over me in case..." She did not want to say it.
"In case someone came while she was asleep. The Grey Men. The Black Aja. Any one of the things that had turned the White Tower from a place of safety to a dark woods full of pits and snares. Something coming in while she lay there helpless. Their faces showed they understood."
As she stretched herself out on the bed and plumped a feather pillow behind her head, Elaine moved the chairs, one to either side of the bed. Nynaeve snuffed the candles one by one, then, in the dark, sat in one of the chairs. Elaine took the other. Egwene closed her eyes and tried to think sleepy thoughts, but she was too conscious of the thing lying between her breasts. Far more conscious than of any soreness remaining from her visit to Shiriam's study. The ring seemed to weigh as much as a brick now, and thoughts of home and quiet pools of water all slid apart with remembrance of it. Of Teleron Riad, the unseen world, the world of dreams, waiting just the other side of sleep. Nynaeve began to hum softly. Egwene recognized a nameless, wordless tune her mother used to hum to her when she was little. When she was lying in bed, in her own room, with a fluffy pillow and warm blankets, and the mingled smells of rose oil and baking from her mother, and, "Rand, are you all right? Perrin? Who was she?" Sleep came. She stood among rolling hills, quilted with wildflowers and dotted with small thickets of leafy trees in the hollows and on the crests. Butterflies floated above the blossoms, wings flashing yellow and blue and green, and two larks sang to each other nearby. Just enough fluffy white clouds drifted in a soft blue sky, and the breeze held that delicate balance between cool and warm that came only a few special days in spring. It was a day too perfect to be anything but a dream. She looked at her dress and laughed delightedly. Exactly her favorite shade of sky blue silk, slashed with white in the skirt, that changed to green as she frowned momentarily, sewn with rows of tiny pearls down the sleeves and across the bosom. She stuck out a foot just to peek at the toe of a velvet slipper. The only jarring note was the twisted ring of multicolored stone hanging around her neck on a leather cord. She took the ring in her hand and gasped. It felt as light as a feather. If she tossed it up, she was sure it would drift away like thistledown. Somehow she did not feel afraid of it any longer. She tucked it inside the neck of her dress to get it out of the way.
"So this is Verin's Teleron Riad," she said. "Corianna Nadil's world of dreams. It does not look dangerous to me."
But Verin had said it was. Black Aja or not, Egwene did not see how any Aes Sedai could tell a lie right out. She could be mistaken. But she did not believe Verin was. Just to see if she could, she opened herself to the one power. Saidar filled her. Even here it was present. She channeled the flow lightly, delicately, directed it into the breeze, swirling butterflies into fluttering spirals of color, into circles linked with circles. Abruptly she let it go. The butterflies settled back, unconcerned by their brief adventure. Myrdral and some other shadow spawn could sense someone channeling. Looking around, she could not imagine such things in that place, but just because she could not imagine them did not mean they were not there. And the Black Aja had all those Terangrial studied by Corianne and Nadil. It was a sickening reminder of why she was there. "At least I know I can channel," she muttered.
I'm not learning anything standing here. Perhaps if I look around...
She took a step,
and was standing in the dank, dark hallway of an inn. She was an innkeeper's daughter. She was sure it was an inn. There was not a sound, and all the doors along the hall were shut tight. Just as she wondered who was behind the plain wooden door in front of her, it swung silently open. The room within was bare, and cold wind moaned through open windows, stirring old ash on the hearth. A big dog lay curled up on the floor, shaggy tail across its nose, between the door and a thick pillar of rough-cut black stone that stood in the middle of the floor. A large, shaggy-haired young man sat leaning back against the pillar in only his small clothes, head lolling as if asleep. A massive black chain ran around the pillar and across his chest, the ends gripped in his clenched hands. Asleep or not, his heavy muscles strained to hold that chain tight, to prison himself against the pillar.
"Perrin?" she said wonderingly. She stepped into the room. "Perrin, what's the matter with you?"
"Perrin!" The dog uncurled itself and stood. It was not a dog, but a wolf, all black and gray, lips curling back from glistening white teeth, yellow eyes regarding her as they might have a mouse it meant to eat. Egwene stepped back hastily into the hall in spite of herself.
"Perrin, wake up! There's a wolf!"
Varen had said what happened here was real and showed the scar to prove it. The wolf's teeth looked as big as knives.
"Perrin, wake up! Tell it I'm a friend!"
She embraced Saidar. The wolf stalked nearer. Perrin's head came up, his eyes opened drowsily. Two sets of yellow eyes regarded her. The wolf gathered himself.
"Hopper!" Perrin shouted.
"No, Egwene!" The door swung shut before her face, and total darkness enveloped her. She could not see, but she felt sweat beading on her forehead, not from heat.
"Light, where am I? I don't like this place. I want to wake up."
A whirring sound, and she jumped before she recognized a cricket. A frog gave a bass croak in the darkness, and a chorus answered it. As her eyes adapted, she dimly made out trees all around her. Clouds blanketed the stars, and the moon was a thin sliver. Off to her right through the woods was another glow, flickering, a campfire. She considered a moment before moving. Wanting to wake up had not been enough to take her away from Teleron Riod, and she still had not found out anything useful. And she had not been hurt in any way. So far, she thought, shivering. But she had no idea who, or what, was at that campfire.
It could be Myrdral. Besides, I'm not dressed for running around in the forest.
It was the last thought that decided her. She prided herself on knowing when she was being foolish. Taking a deep breath, she gathered up her silken skirts and crept closer. She might not have Nynaeve's skill at woodcraft, but she knew enough to avoid stepping on dead twigs. At last she peered carefully around the trunk of an old oak at the campfire. The only one there was a tall young man, sitting and staring into the flames.
Rand.
Those flames did not burn wood. They did not burn anything that she could see. The fire danced above a bare patch of ground. She did not think they even scorched the soil. Before she could move, Rand raised his head. She was surprised to see he was smoking a pipe, a thin ribbon of tabak smoke lifting from the bowl. He looked tired, so very tired.
"Who's out there?" he demanded loudly. "You've rustled enough leaves to wake the dead, so you might as well show yourself."
Egwene's lips compressed, but she stepped out.
"I did not. It's me, Rand. Do not be afraid. It is a dream. I must be in your dreams."
He was on his feet so suddenly that she stopped dead. He seemed in some way larger than she remembered, and a touch dangerous. Perhaps more than a touch. His blue-gray eyes seemed to burn like frozen fire.
"Do you think I don't know it is a dream?" he sneered. "I know that makes it no less real."
He stared angrily out into the darkness as if looking for someone.
"How long will you try?" he shouted at the night. "How many faces will you send? My mother, my father, now her. Pretty girls won't tempt me with a kiss, not even one I know. I deny you, father of lies. I deny you.
Rand, she said uncertainly. It's Egwene. I am Egwene.
There was a sword in his hands, suddenly, out of nowhere. Its blade was worked out of a single flame, slightly curved and graven with a heron.
My mother gave me honey cake, he said in a tight voice, with the smell of poison rank on it. My father had a knife for my ribs. She offered kisses and more.
Sweat slicked his face. His stare seemed enough to set her afire.
What do you bring?
You are going to listen to me, Randall Thor, if I have to sit on you.
She gathered Sidar, channeled the flows to make the air hold him in a net. The sword spun in his hands, roaring like an open furnace. She grunted and staggered. It felt as if a rope stretched too tight had broken and snapped back into her. Rand laughed.
I learn, you see. When it works, he grimaced and started toward her. I could stand any face but that one. Not her face, burn you!
The sword flashed out. Egwene fled. She was not sure what it was she did or how, but she found herself back among the rolling hills under a sunny sky, with larks singing and butterflies playing. She drew a deep, shuddering breath.
I've learned...
What?
That the Dark One is still after Rand? I knew that already. That maybe the Dark One wants to kill him? That's different. Unless maybe he's gone mad already and does not know what he is saying. Light, why couldn't I help him? Oh, Light, Rand!
She took another long breath to calm herself. The only way to help him is to gentle him, she muttered. As well go ahead and kill him. Her stomach twisted and knotted.
I'll never do that. Never!
A red bird had perched on a cloudberry bush nearby, crest lifting as it tilted its head to watch her cautiously. She addressed the bird.
Well, I am not helping anything standing here talking to myself, am I? Or talking to you, either.
The red bird took wing as she stepped toward the bush. It was still a flash of crimson as she took the next step, vanished into a thicket as she took a third. She stopped and fished the stone ring on its cord out of the front of her dress. Why was it not changing? Everything had changed so fast up till now that she could hardly catch her breath. Why not now? Unless there was some answer right here. She looked around uncertainly. The wildflowers taunted her, and the lark song mocked her. This place seemed too much of her own making. Determined, she tightened her hand around the Tarangrial.
Take me where I need to be.
She shut her eyes and concentrated on the ring. It was stone, after all. Earth should give her some feeling for it.
Do it. Take me where I need to be.
Once again she embraced Sidar, fed a trickle of the One power into the ring. She knew it did not need any flow of power directed at it to work, and she did not try to do anything to it, only to give it more of the power to use.
Take me to where I can find an answer. I need to know what the Black Aja wants. Take me to the answer.
Well, you found your way at last, child. All sorts of answers here.
Egwene's eyes snapped open. She stood in a great hall, its vast domed ceiling supported by a forest of massive red stone columns, and hanging in midair was a sword of crystal, gleaming and sparkling as it slowly revolved. She was not certain, but she thought it might be the sword Rand had been reaching for in that dream. That other dream. This all felt so real, she had to keep reminding herself it was a dream, too. An old woman stepped out of the shadows of the column, bent and hobbling with a stick. Ugly did not begin to describe her. She had a bony, pointed chin, an even bonier, sharper nose, and it seemed there were more warts growing hairs on her face than there was face.
Who are you? Egwene said.
The only people she had seen so far in Teleron Riad were those she already knew, but she did not think she could have forgotten this poor old woman.
Just poor old Sylvie, my lady, the old woman cackled.
At the same time, she managed a stoop that might have been meant for a curtsy, or possibly a cringe.
You know poor old Sylvie, my lady. Served your family faithfully all these years. Does this old face still frighten you? Don't let it, my lady. It serves me when I need it as good as a prettier.
Of course it does, Egwene said. It's a strong